Just have a trivia question for you to start off the lesson. Which animal do you think can swim? The elephant or the hippo? How many of y'all think the elephant knows how to swim? Raise your hand. How many of y'all think the hippo can swim? Raise your hand. Okay. Interestingly enough, the hippo can't swim. Sorry. At least according to the internet, it says it can't. I mean, the hippo can't swim. It says that a hippo, because its body density, when it jumps into the water, it can float, but if it allows itself to sink, it will sink to the bottom. The only way to get out is to walk or gallop until it gets to the shore. That's interesting. Elephants are excellent swimmers. And there's something about teaching school that is kind of like being thrown into deep water. And there are times when you're swimming for all your life and it seems like it's hard to get your head above water. You know, teaching is a skill that must be learned. Swimming for humans is a skill that must be learned as well. And one way that you can be ready so that you're not underwater all the time is to prepare for school, to be prepared for school. And hopefully, most of you had time after you're pushed off the edge, that you had time to prepare for this. And I was thinking about it. I don't know how soon your school will be starting, but I imagine it's probably a couple weeks from now or maybe even closer than that. So you don't have a lot of time to do a lot of these things that I'm going to be mentioning today, but hopefully you'll still have time to prepare before you get pushed off the deep end of the pool. Does everyone have a handout? Anyone need a handout? Raise your hand. All right. You know, someone told me that they were looking at the schedule and different classes, and the other classes there wasn't really any class that really fit, so they decided to come here. So that was good to know that, yeah. Anyway, the importance of preparation. So each of you should have a handout, and don't worry if you can't fill in all the blanks on there. It's simply something, a tool for you to help you out. If it's something that can help you, you can fill them in. If you'd rather just sit and listen and soak it all in, that's fine too. Either way works. Whatever is helpful for you. Okay, the three most important words to a painter, a pilot, or a chef are preparation, preparation, preparation. And how many would you want to ride on a plane with a pilot who hadn't prepared ahead of time? The three most important words to a teacher are preparation, preparation, preparation. Very, very important. First of all, it saves time. Preparing saves time. And you might think, well, it takes time to prepare. But actually, it takes more time to not prepare. I remember a time I was teaching, and for whatever reason, I didn't take the time to prepare the lesson. And so I just called the class forward and opened my teacher's guide to the correct place and had it. After I was done, I was like, wow, that was a good job. You know, I did pretty well for not studying. And then one of the students kind of confusedly was like, is this the lesson we were supposed to do today? And here I had taught the wrong lesson. So, well, that wasted a bunch of time right there. But even if you don't prepare and you teach the lesson and you don't know it very well, if you don't know it very well, very likely your students won't learn it very well and you may have to teach the lesson over again the next day. So it doesn't save time in the long run. It promotes a higher standard of teaching. Proper prior planning prevents preposterously poor performance every time. There was a famous brain surgeon named Ben Carson, and one day he got a call and a request to separate two Siamese twins. And he and his team, and these were Siamese twins were born, they were joined at the head. And he and his team spent 5 months planning and working through every detail, every contingency they could envision. They even worked out where each member of the 70-person team would stand in the operating room when they did the surgery. They had a 10-page book detailed each step of the process. They had 5 3-hour dress rehearsals where they went through the motions with 2 life-size dolls that were attached by the head, to the head by Velcro. Why did they prepare so much? The lives of those twins were at stake if they failed. As a teacher, the lives of your students, the futures of your students are at risk. Now, they won't die, and they won't necessarily fail if you fail to prepare one time. But that you're setting them up for failure. When you don't prepare, you're sending a message to your students or to your school that it's not really that important. There are other things that are more important. It's a good example for your students. You know, we heard this morning about being malleable. And he specifically said, if we want our students to be malleable, then we have to be malleable. And it's the same way with preparation. We want our students to work hard. We want our students to be nice. I think Roth Esquith, if I'm saying the name right, in this book, Teach Like Your Hair's on Fire, he says, you know, we want our students to be nice and to be hardworking. So he said the only way to get that is by the teacher being the nicest person he can be and working and being the hardest worker you can, because the students will imitate the teacher. They take much more from you by who you are than what you do and what you tell them. And you can tell them to prepare, but if you come to class and you're not prepared, what are they going to think when you tell them that they need to prepare for the test that you are going to give them the next week? D, it helps prevent burnout. You know, no one enjoys feeling like a failure. And that's exactly how you'll feel if you don't prepare. Preparation is essential to be a successful teacher. And by failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. If you fail to prepare, you're preparing to fail. And there's many teachers that have taught 1 year. And I'm not saying they quit because they didn't prepare well, but oftentimes teachers quit because they feel like a failure, and possibly that is one reason. That one thing that you can do to set yourself up for success is to prepare. So how can we prepare? The most important way we can prepare is to prepare in prayer. How many of you feel unqualified to teach school? Hopefully we all do. And that's great, because none of us are qualified to do this incredible job that we've been given to do. It's a job that should make us feel so inadequate that we go to our knees every day in prayer to ask God for wisdom to teach. Bruce Wilkinson, in The Seven Laws of the Learner, I don't have that with me here, but he says teachers impact more by their character and their commitment than by their communication. Teachers impact more by their character and commitment than by their communication. Maybe you thought teaching was just about communication of academic material. It's a lot more than that. And if you think about your teachers that taught you in school, what do you remember about your teachers? Do you remember them explaining how to add and subtract unlike fractions? Or do you remember the times that they took you aside and talked with you? Or something happened that made you think about their character? And maybe it could be good or it could be bad. A bad teacher seems like is if the teacher makes a mistake, those are often the things we remember about them when we're in school. So don't let that scare you, but just keep that in mind, that who you are is going to impact them a lot more than what you teach, what you tell them. In 2 Corinthians 12, verses 9 and 10, it says, "He said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong." That's where God wants us. He doesn't need somebody coming to school, coming to teach, that has it all figured out and that knows exactly what to do in every situation. He wants someone that is dependent upon him, someone that is not doing it in their own strength. You know, when Jehoshaphat was king, there was a great army that came up against them, and his plea to God was, "O our God, wilt thou not judge them? For we have no might against this great company that cometh against us. Neither know we what to do, but our eyes are upon thee." That's where God wants us every day, to keep our eyes on him, keep focused on him, and trust in him to help us. Pride goes before destruction every time. If we think we've got it figured out, God has a way of showing us that we don't. An angel appeared to Zechariah when the people were discouraged about finishing the temple. It says, "Then he answered and spake unto me, saying, This is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts." That's Zechariah 4, verse 6. You know, we're not made to just always give, give, give. We must daily refuel our tanks at the feet of Jesus. You can't lead on empty. You must constantly be refilling. Take time to pray every day before you go to school. Pray for your students. Pray for your health. Those are things that, pray that God would give you wisdom. And there's many times that you'll, in the school day, where a situation comes up and, you know, you have to make a split-second decision about, you know, two students that were fighting or something that might happen. And it takes wisdom to do that. All right, know your expectations. Do your expectations matter? Is what we expect our students to be, is that going to affect how they do or how their work is? And there's a story in the Seven Laws of the Learner where it talks about how in this college, the one faculty member was told that there's this gifted class that he's going to be teaching he had three different classes, and the third class was supposedly the gifted class. And when he taught them, he just poured out his heart into it, that class. And then he'd have the other two classes, and they wouldn't be nearly as engaging. And then about halfway through the school year, he found out, the dean came to him and was asking about his classes and asked him what his favorite thing about the classes are. And he just said, Section 3, which was that class. And he's like, "Oh, what's with Section 3? And he's just like, "Oh, there's so much... their thoughts are so much deeper. Their grades are better. Everything is just so much better about them." And halfway in the middle, the dean's like, "Well, I'm sorry to tell you, that's actually not the gifted class. We decided this year we're going to spread out the gifted students among all the classes." And he just couldn't believe it. Went back to his desk and checked over the papers and stacked up class one and classes two worksheets and compared them with section three. And section three stack was higher than both class one and section one and section two's papers. But it was simply because he expected them to do well, and that affected their performance. So if you're going in, and maybe that's a good thing for you new teachers, you know, if you're going into a new school, you don't know what to expect. And I guess maybe you should be careful about listening if the previous teacher comes to you and tells you that so and so, they're you got to watch them. They're a troublemaker. Or so and so's, there's a certain point where that's good, but be careful that you don't go into this expecting them. That they are going to be a poor student. They're going to struggle. They're going to get bad grades. We have to expect, and students can feel that if we expect them to do well. We don't plan for them to fail. Know your students, and this would kind of tie into that as well. I've always had the advantage of knowing my students ahead of time. I've always taught in my home community. And so a lot of these ideas come from Jonathan Erb. So I don't know that you have to do all of these things, but it could be a benefit to do some of them. Know their personalities, know their interests, study their records, especially like achievement test scores or their grades. You can look over those, see how they were doing. Maybe you can see areas that they need help in. And again, not that you go into it thinking they're going to get bad grades, but you can possibly do something. Say their grades are poor in math. You could give them speed drills and flashcards at the beginning. In fact, it's a really good idea for I know Christian Light has it. I think they just do in third grade and fourth grade and maybe fifth grade, the first book, speed drills. But it doesn't hurt for all the students to do speed drills. I know one year we did it with everyone in my class, and the older ones enjoyed it as much as the younger ones, and they would, you know, compete to see if they could get a certain number correct in a minute. And of course, they always enjoyed it when I would do one too. Or flashcards, you know, you have a certain number of flashcards you have to do in a minute. And maybe once they get to a certain level, then they can just stop. But they enjoy doing some of those things as well. And it's good for all of them to have that extra practice in math. That is being proactive. Don't wait until problems come up and then do remedial work. Sometimes it's good to do that ahead of time. Start a relationship. Send them a postcard. And that's something you could possibly do this week here at WFTI. If you can go out and find a postcard or postcards and send them to your students and just say, hey, this is Mr. Derek. I'm looking forward to teaching this year. We'll see you so-and-so date. I'm sure that would mean something to them. Make a scrapbook. Make sure that you know their names. And again, the scrapbook wouldn't be something you'd have to do, but even just getting a hold of the last year's yearbook or church calendar or something, make sure that you have pictures and names, and you don't want to be on the first day of school, hey, you in the blue shirt, or don't do that. Make sure you know your students' names. I think that I don't think that's too hard. I know in music camp one year, I had Wendell Nisley for a director, and it was his goal. We came in the first day, and he was working at names, and I think by the second day, second class, he had pretty much everyone's names down pat. It was probably 25, 30 students in the choir. So if you work at it, I know it takes work, but it will be worth it to them. But your name, it means a lot to the students to have the teacher know their name. So study their names. Know your school. School culture. Culture simply means what they do and how they do it. And especially if you're going to a new school, you'll need to learn their culture, because you can't go in there and change everything to the way you're used to doing it. You need to change to the way they're used to doing things. Games, times to assemble for choir or devotions together, procedures, recess times, different things like that. Make sure you know how they do things. Maybe they have a special day, 100th day or something like that they do. Know how they do things. Know the school structure. Is it church-sponsored or is it patron-sponsored? Who's the principal or chairman? Who will you be responsible to? Who's going to be the head? Are you going to be the head teacher? So on. Make sure you know the school structure. Okay, know your curriculum. And this is probably my favorite part. I love books and I love looking through books. So in your classroom, there should be a big stack of boxes somewhere with books in them. And that was my favorite part, opening the boxes up and pulling out the books and organizing them. You can perhaps have some tables set up and have each student's name there, and then you stack their books that they're going to be using, the first books that they need, on a pile, and look through them and get them ready, or study them. And also, this is a good opportunity to find out if you're missing something. If there's a book missing or teacher's guide missing, you want to find that right away so that you can have time to order that. Study the textbooks. So I think I have a teacher's guide here. Study the textbooks, study the teacher's guides, and make sure you know, like with Christian Light, it has more of a spiral approach to learning. It's 30% new material and 70% review, whereas Rod and Staff is probably 70% new material and 30% review. Make sure you know how that's done. And maybe even, I don't know, with the lessons, it's not so hard, but like for science and social studies or history, you would need to look through the textbook and see how much work is there and how much you need to do in order to get through the textbook in a year. Talk to the previous teacher if you need to. Figure out, you know, plan how much you need to do each week to get through, and maybe you aren't necessarily expected to get through, but plan how much you're going to do ahead of time so that you don't come to Christmas time and suddenly you're like, whoa, we got a lot of work to do yet to finish. Especially, you know, if the culture there, you know, talk with the chairman, is that something that you're expected to do to finish to get through the books? Yeah, again, read the teacher's guides. There are alternate tests in here. There's practice sheets. There's lots of good things in here that teachers often miss. Even like interpretation to the different symbols. I think there's, in the second page here, it has what the different symbols mean and about where it was taught, things like that. Those things can all be helpful to you as a teacher. Make sure you, if you know they're there, if you don't know they're there, then you, they aren't helpful to you. But if you can study them ahead of time, you'll know what you have. Know your schedule. Teaching is a very demanding life. It's very fulfilling, but you do need to carefully budget your time. Maybe even ahead of time, plan when you're going to be at school each morning and plan how long you're going to stay. You don't want to be spending so much time there that you get burned out, but yet it's good to have a certain amount of time that you spend at school. And that gets into the second point here in your personal life. Make sure you get to bed on time. Youth and young people often, they think that they're superhuman or something. They can operate on 4 hours of sleep every night, but I don't think it works very well that way. So make sure you get to bed on time. Be careful with other commitments. Teachers are often talented people, and like Jonah said this morning, if you teach school, your talents will grow, and you'll have more talents at the end of the school year. So you might get asked to be Sunday school teacher or be choir director or different jobs you might get asked. Just be careful with too many other commitments. Make sure that you have teaching. You were asked to teach first. That's your first responsibility. That should come ahead of even maybe dating during the school year too. All right. School life. Get a copy of last year's schedule. And I have here a schedule printed off. This is something that is very important for you to have. And hopefully you don't have to make one up. You can possibly go to the previous teacher and ask them for their schedule. Basically, it just has the different times when school starts and when it closes. And then you have your activity there each day for each day of the week. And that could be a two-week schedule or a one-week schedule. But you know what is happening when, so that you can know how much time you have to do things. You can laminate it to the students' desks even, or have it in a prominent place where the students can see as well, because they want to know what's happening. Ask the school board for a school calendar. I think that's something that's important to know. When is the Christmas program or the spring break or Christmas vacation, whatever it might be. Know what your calendar looks like. Plan games and recess times. Get a list of school supplies for the students. Maybe some of you have done this already. That's great. Parents like to have lists of what they should bring for their student, what they should buy for their student, and then they can have the things that they need. All right, prepare your records. So that would include things like your grade book. You'll need a book that you can put all the students' grades in, and that can be, especially if you're grading every day's work, that can be a lot of grades. Make sure you have that organized in a way that makes it simple to do and simple to read when you need to read them. Student permanent record is something else that, again, some schools might have, some schools might not. But make sure you have those if you need them. Fill them out. Get them ready ahead of time. A file cabinet. There should be a file cabinet somewhere with records in there or books or possibly answer keys. Explore those, look through those, see what's in there. And even what I like to do with my books, I taught Christian Light for the first 4 years. And first I would just, beginning of the year, I got all the books out, and I just, every time a student needed a new book, I would tear out the quizzes and the tests. And it was very time consuming each time I did that. And I started doing it at the beginning of the year. I would take all the books and tear out all the quizzes and tests in the beginning and file them in the file cabinet. And it just made it so much easier. Every time the student needed a book, everything was ready. I didn't have to do that each time, and it saved me a lot of time. So, again, that's just something you can do to help save time. Achievement test. Are you going to have to do something about ordering the achievement test? Hopefully, you don't have to order them, but do you know if you need to do them, or plan ahead about those, when you'll do them, and if they're ordered already. Okay, prepare your classroom. Harry Wong, in the book First Days of School, that's another book I would highly recommend. He says that A climate of work is what you want to establish during the first week of school. The first week of school should stress large group organization and student procedures. Spend your time on classroom management of student procedures rather than making your classroom look like a showcase. A few bare but clean bulletin board shelves and flower pots won't disturb anyone. Do not overarrange or overdecorate your room for the opening of school. Your room should be neat and pleasant, but don't spend time making it the ultimate room you want by back to school night. But just be careful with decorations. I think we can spend a lot of time on decorations, but I think there's more important things to do as well. Be careful that you're not trying to impress people by your immaculately decorated classroom. All right, preparing to teach. The first day. You know, what you do on the first day will determine your success or failure for the rest of the year. That's what Harry Wong says in his book as well, and that's very true. What you do on the first day will determine your success for the rest of the year. That's the time to establish procedures and establish routines. And I'm sure Jaden will be talking about this more in his procedures class. And we might repeat ourselves a lot in these classes, but it's important. They're important things. Things, if you hear it three or four times, you know that's something you need to write down. Maybe you think that you'll, as far as with procedures, you think, the first couple days, they can't remember to raise their hand every time. We'll just kind of let things slide the first week, and then we'll tighten down after the week or two, but it does not work like that. And I'm not saying you have to just, hey, if they talk about permission, just take them out and whoop them right away. But make sure that you say something. If the procedure is broken the first day and you do nothing about it, you're making a statement to them that they don't have to. They're not important. We're not going to worry about keeping them. It's very important that you. And procedures are different from rules. In my mind, a rule is something that, if broken, requires a punishment. Whereas if a procedure is broken, you simply make the student do it over again. Perhaps you have a procedure that you're not allowed to run in the school. And so a student comes in running. Well, we don't punish them for that necessarily. We simply make them go back and walk. Just different things like that. If a procedure is broken, we just quietly and calmly make them redo the process, explain what they did wrong, and then make them do it correctly. And that's what makes it stick in their mind. In the first few days, you might have to spend a lot of time doing that, reinforcing those procedures, but that's very important to get them established, and then it'll make the rest of your year much, much easier. All right, your teacher planner. You should have a teacher planner somewhere, and I would recommend that you plan out at least the first 2 weeks, fill in the lessons that you plan to do, and plan exactly what the students will do every day, and make sure that you assign enough work. My students, every year, the first part of the year, it seemed like they came and they were just gobbling up work and doing it like crazy, way more than I thought they would. And so you don't want to have this half a day where suddenly you've nothing planned to do, and the students, we'll just go out and play outside for a bit. That can set a stage for the rest of the year. Make sure you have enough work. Be flexible. Make sure you can change as well. Science supplies is another thing to prepare ahead of time. You can look through the science textbooks and, decide what experiments or activities you'll do. You don't have to do all of them, and you probably can't do all of them, but pick out a few. You need to do some. In fact, it's even a good idea to plan a science experiment for the first day of school, just to get them excited and get them interested in learning. But if you order them ahead of time, then you'll have them when you need them. I think teachers are often the ones making the last-minute trips to town or ordering two-day shipping on Amazon or something to get things on time, and I'm as guilty as anybody. My wife's sitting here, she's smiling because she knows I have this problem. But make sure that if you order them ahead of time, it will save you time and make things go better. Bible memory is another important thing to get ready, and this is something you can get ready now, even before you go to your school. Plan, pick out. Does anyone here have their Bible memory passage picked out for the coming year? Okay, a few? Very good. So that's something that you can do. And don't feel bad if you haven't got that done. When my first year of teaching, I think I was, I kind of decided I'm going to start getting ready for school, but I was sitting in the classroom and I was kind of looking through teacher's guides, and I didn't really know what to do. That was my problem. I didn't know what to do, and it would have been helpful if I would have had a list of things. In fact, I have a checklist here. Maybe we'll pass them out later. James, you want to pass those out maybe later on? There's a checklist. It's not something that I put together. It's something that Jonah put together, but it's a checklist of things to get ready before school starts. Very helpful. But anyway, so with your Bible member, you can pick which passage you want and then divide it up into sections for each week. And if you know you have 34 weeks of school, don't plan 34 weeks of Bible memory. You'll probably need some for review, or maybe some weeks you won't have Bible memory, but have figure out how you're going to do it and have it all planned out so you don't have to figure that out as you go. That can take a lot of time. All right, Christmas Easter program. So especially if you plan on singing a difficult song, it's good to start practicing it right away. One year when I taught, my class sang "Let This Mind Be In You" by Lyle Stutzman. Very fun song to sing, but it is also very difficult. And I was very glad we could start. We started right away, and we got a lot further on it than we would have if we would have waited in time. In fact, I think the class did very well singing it. It wasn't far from perfect, but it was still went well. And it was because we started practicing right away. So this is something you can, you know, start picking out some songs that you want to sing for your program, and then you can incorporate that into your music class even, practicing for the program. Plan some motivational projects. Just make sure that you, it should be a team effort if you have a motivational project. There should be a team effort and team reward. Be careful about just rewarding the students that get the best grades. Make sure if you can incorporate where everyone is motivated to do better. Each student is motivated to improve their own grades. Don't just say that we're going to give, you know, a certain thing to everyone who gets 100 on their spelling test. Maybe some extracurricular ideas that you could plan out ahead of time, like science fair or special days, like the 100th day, or a pest hunt, something like that. I know when we were in school, we did a pest hunt, and it was basically, it wasn't necessarily school related, but we had two teams, and there was a certain amount of points for killing mice or flies or coyotes, things like that. And so each day we'd come in and we'd check off the things that pests that we had killed, and it brought a lot of energy into school. So it doesn't always have to be school related, but it can be just something to bring energy into school and get them excited, and that energy can pass on to their schoolwork then as well. But those are things you can plan ahead of time. And again, when those are things to plan now, because once you get into school, it's like you just there's suddenly not as much time to plan things, and you'll understand. If you haven't taught, you'll understand after you've been teaching for half a year that suddenly it's like, where do I find time to do this? Oftentimes teachers don't plan special things like that because they just don't have time, or they can't find time to plan it well. Again, know your school culture, what they have been doing in the previous years, and try to keep up the culture that's there. If there's things that, you know, the previous teachers might have spent years developing this, maybe a science fair or something like that, and if you just come in there and decide to quit doing it, there's something lost there. Okay, plan your daily lessons, daily lesson preparation. Law one in the seven laws of teaching is that the teacher must know that which he would teach. Now, do I have a volunteer? Somebody would like to take a big bite out of this banana just as it is. Gerald, would you like to take a big bite out of it? It has a peel. Well, no, of course not. It would probably leave a bad taste in your mouth if you took a bite out of it just as it is. But, you know, with a little preparation, it can become a very tasty mouthful. And it's the same way with teaching your lessons to your students. A little bit of preparation can go a long ways into making that lesson enjoyable for your students versus just leaving a sour taste in their mouth about schoolwork. Study the objectives of the lesson. Make sure you know what is the irreducible minimum that you're supposed to teach. Plan the review. And again, in Rod and staff, you might have to do a little more of that. And there is a review built into the teacher's guides, whereas the Christian Light would have review more in the lesson. Either way, plan what you're going to do for review. Maybe you can, you know, even plan some songs or things like that to help the what they're teaching stick. Do it the day before. There was one time when I was heading to school, and I had decided to do something special for the co-teachers. I made some iced coffee there at home ahead of time, and so I was going to bring this iced coffee to school and have a little bit of just a treat before we started the school day. Anyway, so I was going up, and this is in Tennessee, going up around these curvy roads in Dixon, Tennessee, and suddenly I was going around a curve, and the iced coffee was sitting in a gallon container on the floor, my Toyota pickup, and suddenly I saw it starting to tip over. And so I quickly tried to reach down and grab the thing and get it. I couldn't stand to see all that good iced coffee going to waste. And reached down there to try to get it and set it up again. Next thing you know, my truck had kind of gone off the road. So I reached back up and quickly tried to turn back on the road and overcorrected. And next thing you know, I was spinning out of control. And I wasn't going that fast, but I was out of control, sliding. And here comes another vehicle around the curve. It's like, oh no. And thankfully, it was slow enough where that neither one of us were hurt. But I was stuck there for a while. By the time I got to school, they were ready singing for having their devotions. They were, we were just singing together that morning. And yeah, didn't have much time to prepare that day for my classes. So it's good to do it the day before. And even if you think of something that you're going to do then in the lesson, you can possibly bring those things at home. If you're doing an object lesson or something, you can make sure they're available. If you wait till the morning at school to do it, then you won't be able to have that time to go get things that you might need. And also it gives time for the lesson to soak in. You have time to think about it more. So it's good to do that the day before. And study the lesson until, I'm sorry, skip number four. Do a few problems yourself. Make sure you know. Sometimes we can look at something and we can think we know how to do it, and then when it actually comes down to it, then we forget one step. And I've been there before. You know, you're explaining to the students and suddenly you're like, I remember one time I just had to tell my students, I was explaining it to them, and all of a sudden I'm like, wait, I don't know how to do this after all. So I told them to go back to their desks. I'm sorry, I didn't prepare like I should have, and studied it until I had it figured out, then try again, explain it to them. Remember, if you're explaining it to them and you don't understand it very well, then they for sure won't get it. You have to understand it before you can teach it to them. So do a few problems yourself and study the lesson until you're excited about it. And again, this is something that's very important as well, because you know, there's a lot of things to study. There's a lot of classes to have, and it's hard to know how much time you should spend in preparation. It's more important to prepare for the next day's lesson than it is to check today's lessons. And that was something that was really hard for me to accept for a while, because checking was pretty important to me, and it is pretty important, I think. But if you're all you're doing is checking today's work and not preparing for tomorrow, that's going to affect the grades tomorrow. And so I think it's more important to do that. And there's always more preparation that can be done. There's always more you can do. So you simply study the lesson until you're excited. You could spend hours preparing, but unfortunately we don't always have time to do that for every class that we have. And especially for you new year teachers, you might have to just pick one subject that you especially spend time studying before you have classes. Sometimes you just have to do that. You don't have time to prepare everything. So pick one thing and teach one thing well. And then the second year you can teach that well. Then you can move on to the second subject and teach and learn that subject well. And by the time you've taught 5 or 6 years, then you're teaching all of them extra well. So in conclusion, teaching is a skill that requires a lot of effort, planning, and preparation. And how many of you would want to jump into 10 feet of water without any flotation device if you didn't know how to swim? I think most of y'all wouldn't be foolish enough to do that. But please don't jump into the classroom without preparing. You know, just like swimming, you can't learn how by simply listening to somebody talk about how to swim. You can't go to a class and they tell you how to swim and then you can jump in and swim. There comes a time when you have to jump in and you have to just simply do it. But yeah, make sure you prepare ahead of time. You know, even elephants can't always keep their heads above water. Sometimes they actually go underwater, but that's where their snorkel comes in. They can stick their snorkel above the water and they can still breathe even when their heads are underwater. So I like to compare that to our underwater snorkel is prayer. When our heads are underwater, we always have that lifeline. We never get so far underwater that we can't reach out with prayer to God to provide us wisdom. Even when we're in over our heads, we can still survive if we keep a strong connection to our Heavenly Father. And maybe you'll discover, as I have, that teaching and swimming underwater can be a thrilling experience. Again, the takeaway for this class is the most important words to a painter, pilot, or chef are preparation, preparation, preparation. And the three most important words for a teacher are preparation, preparation, preparation. Are you going to be proactive this year, or are you going to be reactive? And the good news is you get to choose. You're dismissed.